Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin wins more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Good evening and welcome to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we are your co-hosts today on your, it used to be weekly, your once weekly journey through all things fermented.
Your once in a while journey through all things fermented. Hosted on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Ding, ding, ding. She got it right. .org.
That's right. It's Apple Podcasts also.
I like it.
Nobody cares about them.
Very masculine for men about it today.
Mary is not with us today. She is off on a work trip down in Florida. She's still doing that day gig to allow us to frolic in this brewing business, which is, thank you, Mary. We love you, and we do miss you as co-hosting here. To that regard, a bunch of really fun things are happening here in New York City. Next week is the 12th annual New York City Home Brewers Guild sponsored Homebrew Alley 12 competition. Homebrew Alley got about 600 entries this year. We spent last weekend kind of sorting them and registering them in. We're holding it at Fifth Hammer Brewing Company. We have judges and stewards, but I think there's still room to judge and steward. So if you go to homebrewalley.com, you can, if you're in the New York City area, we certainly can use your help. But if not, you just want to support your local homebrew brethren, we're going to have our award ceremony around 6 o'clock, I think, at Fifth Hammer Brewing Company. It's a grand old time will be had by all. Some homebrew will be shared and celebrated with the people who make them.
Yeah, that sounds pretty great. Another little thing that's happening, there's a Mycology 101 class going on at the Earth Arts Center in Brooklyn on February 17th on a Saturday. I think I just have to register on the Facebook page to go there. So just search Mycology 101. So if you want to learn how to forage mushrooms, but maybe you shouldn't actually forage mushrooms. But, you know, just to know the difference between them.
Make mycology your ecology.
Exactly.
And most importantly, what we're here about, I'm very excited about, we are getting close to the 10th annual New York City Craft Beer Week, New York City Beer Week, we now call it, and it is going to take place on starting Friday, February 23rd, running all the way to Sunday, March 4th. All sorts of really fun things are happening. We're doing a smash beer thing with all the guild. We have more breweries in New York City than we have had, I think, since Prohibition. Yeah, and that number is 35 actually brewing, and there's a strong unity amongst all of us. Rising tide floats all boats. We're supporting each other. We're having a lot of fun. I'm one of the many that opened in the last year. And on today's show, we are featuring our friends from Five Borough Brewing Company with Blake Tomnitz.
Yep.
Carl Knoop.
Hey.
And Nick Griffin.
Hi there.
All of Five Borough Brewing Company.
Yay! Hey. Hey. All right.
So it's been a long journey for all of us, but we're going to talk all about Five Boroughs and your journey. And Blake, you've been in, when you are the founder, one of the founders,
yep.
And from the beginning of this. So tell us what it was like from concept. What? Why are you doing this crazy thing? There's no money in this. You're crazy.
The crazy industry, yeah. Crazily enough, the concept started back in probably 2011 or so. I was an amateur homebrewer up in Boston, and kind of stumbled into a homebrew shop over in Cambridge, Mass, and my head kind of just exploded. I think I was more so just kind of overwhelmed by like the infinite nature of what you could put in beer, what you could do with beer. So literally walked out of there with a homebrew kit, started brewing in my dorm room with my roommates. We got all our equipment confiscated, so we started going out to kind of a nano brewery-esque setup out in Natick, Mass, called Barleycorns, and kept on brewing and brewing and brewing. My parents showed up at the end of my senior year to move me out, and I think we're somewhat horrified at the amount of beer in our dorm room. But that was really what it was. I was interning in the city at the time, and I think there was always kind of this question of what was New York City's beer, and kind of creating this kind of holistic concept of it didn't matter what borough you were from or what neighborhood you were from, kind of creating a concept that all New Yorkers could get around. So really started full time on it, I want to say in 2014, with my co-founder, Kevin O'Donnell, mm-hmm. Mutual friends with Carl Knoop over here, who has a very storied experience in the New York City craft beer scene, who then introduced us to Nick, and we kind of had a traveling homebrew setup, kind of a more beer 15-gallon system. We were up in the Bronx and Mott Haven out at Carl's place in the Rockaways, and kind of were just lugging this homebrew kit all around New York City. Eventually found a spot down in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, about 15,000 square feet. Huge ceilings, and we're kind of just overwhelmed by it and said, hey, look, if this is what, you know, we really want to do and make sure we can produce enough beer to reach kind of all corners of the five boroughs, this is the spot to do it. Started construction, signed the lease in July of 2015, started construction probably November, December. Took about a year and a half to do construction and pretty much what we, you know, call a wet run of our entire system, and sure. Then launched the first week of August. So it's been a crazy, we're coming up on 6 months or so. I think we're there right now. So it's been crazy.
It's pretty amazing to have gotten through it. And I love the concept from the beginning too. I mean, your one of your taglines is United by Beer.
Absolutely.
And you know, when we first spoke pretty much almost a year ago, when we got real intense about it after the opening bash at the Diamond. But
Coleman Hawkins,
yeah. Avid jazz fan over here, to my heart. Yep, you know, uniting the boroughs by a single beer.
Absolutely,
I dig that. But it's not just the beer uniting; it's the people surrounding it. And so, I really dig and appreciate that.
Yeah,
And you certainly have a great big tab room with what you do, and a lot of room to expand. So you have 50,000 square feet, but how much of that are you utilizing?
Right now, I mean, well, the tap room is kind of fully utilized just because we built that entire space out. The storage area, the tap room is about 2,500 square feet. Storage area and offices about 2,500 square feet. We'll have a full-scale lab in there too, which Nick can elaborate on. And then we've got about 10,000 square feet of production. And I would say, you know, between the brew house and kind of the current fermenter setup, we're only really utilizing maybe like half of it, give or take, you know? So
it's
we've got another.
It's smaller pretty fast.
Yeah,
it's getting,
is.
Yeah. And you guys have now, at this point, you have a farm brewery license and a regular production.
Yeah,
the combo
is really exciting. We just got our combined craft manufacturing license. So we had done some farm beers prior, did a nice Rogan beer for New York Rye Week. We did a collaboration with Jason from Strong Rope, great guy. So now this not only gives us the ability to keep on doing kind of awesome New York State farm beers, but we can also expand into cider and spirits and wine in our tap room too. So that's something we're thinking
that's
about.
Pretty fantastic to be able to do that and offer it. So your first runs, did your first beers go out to the people?
Here and there, you know, I think it was a lot of iteration, quite a bit of iteration. I think it was mostly kind of, you know, filling up growlers, you know, filling up bottles and sampling our friends and our family on them, getting feedback. Kind of the way we thought about our product portfolio, and Nick can kind of dive into this, is we wanted to really set it up where it's like, you know, had our core year-round beers, you know, didn't matter whether this is your first beer or, you know, you're kind of the master beer drinker, you could drink them and then kind of work our way up and make sure we really had, like, I guess, you know, different beers for different people on the, you know, whatever they want to drink, you know, kind of on that consumer pyramid, so to speak. So, you know, we have our core IPA, our core Pilsner, our Goza, our Kettle Sour, and then we've got a Hoppy Lager, which is kind of that like IPL title.
I love that Hoppy Lager, man. I brought that up just to I feel like, what you're making is exactly what you said. It's very deliberate and you're, what you're presenting to the people is very deliberate. You're taking the care and you're not letting anything go by that is missing the mark on any concept to glass situation. And as a fellow brewer and consumer, I appreciate that. Yeah. And, Carl, how long have you been with the project?
I started in October of 2015, and it seems just like yesterday. But it also seems like 100
November
years ago.
November of 2015.
things happen real fast. It's amazing when you're involved in a project, just how fast it goes by. The day-to-day struggles make it seem like an eternity, mm-hmm. But it happens in the flash of an eye. Mm-hmm. And, we were there in the trenches, literally, figuratively and literally in the trenches. Yeah. And it's something that it's great to look back and knowing you've been there and never want to go back. I'm so glad to be out of the trenches.
Yeah,
Speaking of been there, you have a significant place in the Wayback Machine for New York City Brewing. What's some of your background?
Well, I started at Brooklyn Brewery in 2003. Mm-hmm. I ended up there on a Friday night while exploring Williamsburg, and literally there was a sign on the wall that said, tour guide wanted. And the person I was with, she was like, you know, you should take that job. And applied for the job, and about a month later got a position giving tours and tending bar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they couldn't get rid of me. I was there even when I didn't need to be there, I was there mostly just tasting beer. And it was very new to me. I think it was new to a lot of people back then. I had traveled to the West Coast, got a real taste for craft beer, and was actually discouraged when I came back east. When I couldn't, I was like, oh, I'm going to go back to drinking macros. And, Sam was a big deal back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I seeked it out. I really wanted to get into the scene. Started from I was pond scum, as they say. Start from the pond scum and work your way up. And it's been a wild ride. It's incredible to look back. And when I started in 2003, there were two breweries producing beer.
I was about to ask that.
There was Brooklyn and Six Point, brand new.
Mm-hmm. And Chelsea.
And very, very slim competition. We thought we had the market cornered. It was a challenge to wrestle away a little slice of the beer market for craft.
I know.
Right? And now it's grown into this amazing giant. And New York is becoming a destination for craft beer drinkers, not only in the country but around the world. When I was with Brooklyn, we sold about half of our capacity overseas.
Yeah.
And the Swedish market loves New York. They love Brooklyn. And
we're talking about kind of sweet people? Swedish?
Yeah, Swedish. They're kind of sweet. Sweeter.
I'll be here all week. Well, every other week.
But they would talk about how people were coming to New York to try the food scene in New York's been a thing forever. Mm-hmm. But craft beer was becoming a reason to visit the five boroughs. A dynamic industry that was new, and it used to be people thought the European beer scene was the hotbed of innovation and flavor and quality, and now it's kind of reversed. Mm-hmm. People are coming from Europe to the U.S. to try all these new and exciting flavors, and it's kind of been cool to see it blossom over the years.
Yeah, yeah, and to be a part of it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that even when you look at the United States, New York City right now is probably one of the better places to come and be a beer drinker.
Mm-hmm.
As Carl was saying, I think one of the things that makes New York City unique is that we're not only doing these more innovative styles, but also a lot of the craft breweries in New York City are also producing really traditional European styles as well.
Yeah, yeah. Especially as New Yorkers, we kind of have to run the gamut of everything to fit everybody's wants, because everybody has all this taste. Totally. Nick, where are you coming from?
So I got my start in beer at Southern Tier Brewing Company.
Okay.
I started there working in their quality control lab. Yes. I was there for a couple years, and then got dragged to New York City by my girlfriend at the time, and landed in the Bronx with Damien.
Yeah. So Damien of Bronx.
Damien of the Bronx Brewery. Yeah. Yep. And I was the lead brewer there for a little while. That's where I met Carl. And then, Carl left, and a little bit down the road, I found out about Five Boroughs and, met the team and, got to see the space. And it was like, wow, this is just an unbelievable opportunity.
Yeah.
And joined them not soon after that.
It's fantastic. I love what's happening over there. We're going to take a really quick break. We'll be back with the men about it.
Today's program was brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. What do you think of when you hear Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh, and squeaky cheese curds. Or deep-fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Uplands Cheese, the Farmstead Cheese Company behind Pleasant Ridge Reserve. I think of delicious, stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think of Dunbarton Blue, made by master cheesemaker Chris Raleigh. I think of Ross Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Championship Cheese, and Sutari's Black Pepper Bellavitano, the 2017 U.S. Championship Cheese. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, with lush grasslands and a glacial water supply that produce the very best milk. Fourth-generation cheesemakers combine old-world tradition with new ideas and the highest standards to make innovative cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country.
Welcome back to Foment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm here in the studio with Rachel Jacob, my co-host. How you doing, Rachel?
I'm doing all right. I know I've been very quiet. Everybody is very talkative and very interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah, that plus we only have so many mics and I can't be like this.
That's also true. But I wanted to talk about a little bit. So it says on your website that you guys have 16 beers on tap. That's a lot. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, yeah. So it seems like now, you know, we've been open 6 months and we've been constantly turning out pilot batches and we're finally at the point where we have all of our taps full of different beers. So Blake was talking earlier about our core lineup, the IPA, Hoppy Lager, Pilsner, Goza. But we also have a pretty extensive R&D program where we're just brewing kind of any sort of crazy idea that we come up with, or, you know, maybe we either want to try to brew a spot-on traditional Helles or like a 2.5% super hopped up session IPA. So we can kind of really play around with, you know, different ingredients and techniques. And
mind you, when he says R&D program, you guys have a 30-barrel brew house.
We do.
And a 5-barrel little system, right?
Yep, we have a 5-barrel brew house as well. So we use that.
At 5-barrel brew.
At 5-barrow's brew.
We didn't say that this segment.
There's a lot of five. And we're with Fifth Hammer.
And we're with Fifth Hammer. That's right. And there are five people in the room. Who's the Fifth Hammer?
But we do use this 5-barrel predominantly for beers that are available in our tasting room. Mm-hmm. But then you will see them once in a while. We'll sprinkle some out into the market just to, you know, see how the drinkers in New York City react to, you know, one of our more adventurous or unique beers.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of adventurous and unique, you know, you make your Gosa, you have a lot of these different beers. And one thing that we forget as homebrewers to utilize, or sometimes people think they're cheating, we don't use sugar very often, except for maybe I use them in saisons, but you know, a lot of people use them in pale ales and other things. We did a collaboration the other day. Tell us a little about the collaboration that we did for the Class of 17.
Yep. So the beer is called Class of 17, and we thought it'd be a cool idea to get all of the breweries that opened up in 2017 over to our space, and we brewed a relatively hoppy pale ale. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of nice. Everyone that has opened in the past year has been incredibly busy, as you know. So it was, yeah. You know, we were really appreciative that everybody could take a day, set it aside, and, you know, be able to come up to our facility and, you know, not only meet the other brewers that are just open in the past year, but also brew beer together.
And we all hope to be there. We're going to pregame for New York City Beer Week on February 22nd there at your tap room for it.
Yeah.
We're excited about that. But we sprinkled a little bit of sugar in there. Why'd we do that?
We did. So we use sugar all the time, actually. Different types of sugar. And, you know, in this beer in particular, we added some dextrose in there. Mm-hmm. So for most of the beers that we brew that tend to end up on the more bitter kind of scale of these hoppy beers, we put a little bit of dextrose in there to dry the beer out, bring that bitterness forward a little bit, get a little alcohol boost.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a underutilized tool.
Right.
That maybe harkens back to, you know, it might sound very like early 2000s, but for those types of beers, I think it really brings forward the components of the beer that we want to be more noticeable.
Mm-hmm. Carl, you like using sugar?
You know, I've been a big proponent of Belgian candy
sugar for
a long time. We actually just packaged a beer with two types of Belgian candy syrup, a dark and a light. And, oh, man, it was a lot of sugar. Nick, how much sugar were you pouring there?
So in the five-barrel batch, it was right around 100 pounds of sugar, actually.
Ah, okay. Which is what percentage of the grist on that one? It was a big beer, though, right?
It was big, yeah. It was this big the Belgian quad?
It was about 10.5%.
It was around 15% of the grist
by weight.
By weight, yeah.
And the sugar added a lot of color.
Yeah,
You know, people forget that not only does sugar add an alcohol component, but it can lend a lot more in addition to color, aroma, and mouthfeel. And so you can't sugar's not cheating.
Yeah, you have to choose your sugars correctly. Yeah.
It's a component of complexity.
Yes. And you talk about choosing your sugars correctly. That's why we went and used two different types of sugar in this quad. So we had our extra dark candy sugar. Mm-hmm. But we didn't want to add too much of that because I feel like sometimes you like a little bit of an irony character to it.
Yep.
So we cut that 50-50 with just a clear Belgian candy syrup as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that way we got the nice color change. Candy syrups, yep. And then actually a couple days ago we brewed a Belgian single with just some clear candy sugar in it. So we use sugar all the time.
Yeah.
And depending on what you're trying to get out of it. So we talked about dextrose, where you're drying your beer out. We also brew some beers with lactose that is doing kind of the exact opposite. You're bringing the sweetness up a little bit. The mouthfeel increases as well.
When you use lactose, what's your practice there? Do you use it? Where in the process?
We add it in the kettle, probably about 15 minutes left in the boil.
Mm-hmm. And I asked it because the first time I've ever used lactose was yesterday for my birthday. I got myself a bunch of lactose for my birthday, you know.
Happy birthday.
I say milk sugar, but sex here is milk sugar. I didn't want to use it in the whole batch. A lot of homebrewers I've seen have used it at packaging, and I basically wanted to split a batch up, and I basically dissolved it and threw it into a batch before packaging, and I'm excited to see how this goes, but having never done it, we'll see. Also, by way of Belgian candy sugar or candy syrups, it's basically invert sugar, and you can make that at home yourself by squeezing a little bit of lemon or citric acid in it and some water and dissolving sugar and getting it up to 350 degrees, and you can get it to varying colors and make your own, basically, on the thing. It's pretty fun to do and easy to do. The information is out there.
It smells great, too.
Yeah. I used to make it myself at 508 because I had access to the kitchen, but clearly on a 15-barrel scale, it doesn't make sense, and I don't have a kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, if you can make it at home, that's the way to do it because it is definitely not a cheap product to use.
Right, absolutely.
Hence why all these Belgian beers are so expensive.
Right, but you can use cheap sugar to do it. Like, exactly. It's really just just like that regular Domino sugar that you're throwing in there. That's what I had to say about that. In your Gosa, what do you put in your Gosa? So Gosas have alternate ingredients. Are you using coriander?
So we are not using coriander, actually.
Cool.
I'm not a huge fan of coriander in beer. So we actually piloted this beer quite a bit. We started out using... The grist bill has always been the same. It's pretty much 50-50 wheat and Pilsner malt.
Wheat pills.
And we started out using pure lactocultures and found that we were getting the beer really tart, but the tartness was also kind of too clean, if that makes any sense. So
sure.
It almost had like a cidery component to it. So we then did a couple batches using yogurt as a source of the bacteria, and they came out, as far as we were concerned, a little more with the profile that we wanted. So,
were you straining the whey and using it?
We were just throwing the whole thing in there. We tried making starters, and when it gets to especially scaling it up to the big system, you're like, oh, man. That's just so much work. Like, just dump it in, and it takes about 36 hours to get down to the pH that we want, which is like 3.2, 3.3, and
pre-acidifying.
Probably to 4.5.
Okay.
In the kettle, then add the yogurt in, and we actually bubble CO2 up through our kettle just to keep it anaerobic and make sure there's no nasties growing in there before we boil it.
You're bubbling it through the liquid throughout the time your kettle souring?
Yep. Yeah, so we hook up to the drain in our kettle, and at like 2 or 3 PSI, just bubble it up there the entire time. We don't have a way to completely seal off our kettle.
Right, to make sure there's a blanket, and even though some's escaping.
Yep, exactly.
Because your ceilings are really high. Is there access to the roof?
There is.
This is Carl, the man that talks to you about our ceiling.
You need to be part Spider-Man to get up there, but it can be done.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I've done kettle scours at Fifth Hammer, I haven't done any in the cold winter, but I basically take a ladder to the front, and I've got 17-foot ceilings, so I'm taking a ladder, and I'm scared of heights as it is. I can hardly dry hop without freaking out. But, yeah. I haven't done a winter one yet.
Yeah, we actually just did a Hazy Stupid Love too with lactose, right?
That had some.
Tell
some
us about
sugar.
Hazy Stupid Love.
Ryan Bedford, our taproom manager, came up with the name, so
yeah,
that's his credit due there.
Is your New England style IPA?
Yeah, you could say that. It's our hazy, not bitter IPA that we brewed on the 5-barrel. So we've done a couple of these hazy beers in the past, and we were bringing in separate yeast pitches for them, most of the time like a London ale yeast.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it'd be a cool experiment because a lot of times these British ale yeast end up with a little bit more sweetness. They don't attenuate quite as much. Right. So we said, hey, let's try to mimic what you get out of these British ale yeasts by using our house ale yeast, which is kind of your standard West Coast ale strain,
mm-hmm.
and add some lactose in to kind of bring the sweetness up a little bit, add some more body. So we brewed a Northeast style IPA, but with cow ale and some lactose, and we were really happy with the results.
It's delicious.
Thank you.
I had it for breakfast the other day while collaborating with you guys.
Yeah.
So I mean, watching you brew.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those hops were all in the whirlpool and kind of, you know, followed the techniques that people are using to a tea, and we're definitely happy with the results.
Yeah, year to date, that's been the fastest keg kicked in our tasting.
Yeah.
I think that fruited gozas did pretty well too, especially closer to summer. So we take the base goza too, and Nick, we did like a raspberry goza, pineapple mango, and then we got cherry plum on now. So it's pretty exciting.
You guys are not self-distributing, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
You guys are with our friends at Ski.
Yep.
Are you guys currently just in the 5 boroughs? You guys extend beyond?
Yeah, I think that was a big thing for us. Was more importantly, just kind of looking at where the market's going. I think it's, for us, it was, and you look at New York City just in and of itself, it's, you know, 9 to million people. You're getting 50 million tourists a year. There's 20,000 plus retail accounts. And it was kind of the view of like, wow, like, I think we have some work to do here just in New York City. It's New York City is kind of like an anomaly marketplace. You know, there's so much room for growth. I think there's room for more breweries here in New York City, which is an exciting prospect too.
And a far cry from when Carl started.
Exactly. Yeah.
Kind of the mindset has shifted. And the appreciation.
I think there was kind of that like Midas touch period back in like 2010 to 2012. These massive year-over-year growth rates where people were just kind of. A lot of local breweries were evolving into regional breweries, I think, at that point in time, and I think now it's kind of. There is some, you know, it's not necessarily the most appealing horizon, you know. So I think for us, that really cool concept to be a hyper-local brewery but also a large production facility, you can't really do that anywhere else other than New York City. I think it was also, too, just given our concept, you know. We want to be able to make sure that we're able to give each borough some love, you know, and get out there and get to events and meet drinkers from all over the city. And it's a lot of territory. It's a lot of people. So we've got our work cut out for us. So I think for the near term, we're definitely staying in the 5 boroughs. We launched Queens and Staten Island the first week of December. So we kind of did like a methodical kind of borough by borough, you know, sections of boroughs rollout to make sure we weren't getting over our skis. And so now full 5 borough footprint, and we'll see where the year takes us.
It's pretty awesome. There's not many, there's no other brewery really at Sunset Park except for at this point making any beer in Sunset Park.
Yeah, well, you had Ortega. Oh, we have Ortega in lineup at Industry City.
Yeah, I think they just moved, or they're currently producing right there. And
yeah,
there's some change ups going on
throughout
that area.
So I mean, it was appealing for us. I mean, really for us. I mean, we looked all over the city. We looked in the Bronx. We looked out in Bushwick. Looked in Sunset Park, and obviously, you know, at the end, given the size of the space and the ceiling height, and just it was an old steel fabrication plant, made sense. So, but it has been nice because we've seen people coming down kind of from the Gowanus Collective, you know, the other half's the Folkspears, the Stronger Up, the Threes. And that's what's really exciting is people are kind of making their way down to an area where there's not a lot of, obviously, breweries and not necessarily a lot of places to kind of drink and go out either. So that's been really exciting
to become a destination.
Yeah.
And do that.
Yeah.
And you guys have a really nice stage setup sort of above your bathrooms.
Yeah, my co-founder Kevin kind of took the lead on that, and we do have some musicians on our team.
That's where we're going next. All right.
Going to break out the jaw harp.
Yes. our sales rep, Brian LaCrage, is part of the American Sankeys. Chris and Carl play the drums. So
you guys are both drummers. You only have one drum set, though. Who gets
you? Not guys? Even there's this weekend. Another one appeared overnight.
I think we have three drum sets, actually.
Three drum sets now?
Yeah. And bongos.
Yeah. And bongos, all right. Yeah, yeah. I have a full backline, but like for some reason, two drum sets at Fifth Hammer. But I don't play drums; I just have them for my people to show up.
And you got the piano too.
I do have, yeah, full, yeah,
piano. Yeah. So,
but I play straight-ahead jazz, you know. Yeah. Wednesday nights. That's the jam. I do want to take, and I will do this. I will ask this outright right here. Home Positions want to tour New York City's breweries, and we want a gig. The fee is very simple, very easy. It's $2,000 per man per hour or free beer. So whatever sounds good to you.
Free beer sounds amazing.
We will be playing at the Fermentation Festival, which is going to be the first weekend of New York City Beer Week on that Saturday at the Brooklyn Expo. If you go to nycfermfest.com, you can get more information about that. But we'll be celebrating all things fermented, from sauerkraut, kimchi, water kefir, milk kefir, kombucha, pickles, you name it. Vinegar, cheese, bread, Rachel, all of it. And that's the prelude for the evening festival where New York City is like having our kind of grand old opening bash. We got 60 breweries under one roof, and a lot of people from out of town. So we're celebrating kind of the community that the hub that we are and all of the New York City breweries. Very fucking excited about that. I'm excited. Do you guys know what you guys are bringing to that festival yet? It's far away.
We have some ideas. We're definitely going to, since we're canning class of 2017 too, we're going to bring some of the cans too. But Nick is currently curating his list.
Yeah, we'll probably bring something weird along with some of the more standard styles. Yeah.
I know better than to ask that question, because every time someone asks me that question, I say brew du jour light and brew du jour dark. I should bring the same thing every festival.
We were talking about on the ride over in the car, and it's like, oh, ooh, that sounds like a good idea. Oh, no, that sounds like a good idea, too.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it'll probably be a spur-of-the-moment kind of decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, people are bringing their good foot forward on that one, and it's worth buying the tickets. You can go to NYC Brewed to find out all the information about the New York City Beer Week. And this has been a word from our sponsor. it's pretty amazing too. So the last year's editions, this class of 17 includes, if I can remember them all, what's the name of your brewery again? Five Boroughs, Fifth Hammer, Killsboro, Island to Island, Wartega, Lineup,
Randolph,
and Circa. Yeah. That's amazing for one year's growth for our city, which only 5 years ago only had six breweries. Just commend you guys for it.
I'm pretty sure you would have to dig through the records prior to Prohibition to find a year where seven breweries opened in one year.
In 1 year?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's the only time in New York City history that that's happened.
I'm hoping we can pass the tradition along, too. I mean, really.
Seven more next year?
Yeah, well,
trying to
at least can keep the collaboration alive, because not only think it was a great opportunity to kind of for everyone to come together and maybe meet people who they haven't met before, but I think it's just to kind of celebrate all the progress that we're continuing to make in New York City. I mean, really got to give credit to Sean Torres at Killsboro, too. I mean, we were probably more beers deep than we should have been at Blocktoberfest, and this is kind of how the whole conversation stemmed. And Sean was like, I'm a fan of classes, and I was like, I don't know what that means. and then that's kind of how it blossomed.
I can't understand you, man.
I was like, Sean, so one thing kind of led to another, and then kicked it off kind of in December, and it's exciting. I think this is really cool. So
it is. Yeah. It is indeed. What do you guys see for so the taproom itself is finding its own growth.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are kind of growing, and you guys are getting more accounts. There's no theme. I appreciate you guys also, because it's not like you're focusing on Belgian. There's good beer and the other kind, and you guys are just going forward with the whims. But if I'm answering my own question about you guys for you guys. But I was going to say, do you have any things that you're excited about? Well, first of all, this quad,
I think we should open
that. We should pour that.
Yeah. We were talking about these
that's
sugars
what I meant.
Before.
I'm thirsty.
10.5%. So just we'll take it. Well, maybe not. But
so it's a breakfast beer.
Exactly. Yeah. I like your thinking.
Yeah. But I mean, this is an extremely different from most of the things in your tap room. You tend, from what I've noticed of your beers, they're all extremely drinkable, extremely quaffable.
Thank you.
You know, every sip I want another sip. You know. But this, I haven't had this one yet, so I reserved it.
Yeah. Rachel's looking for a glass.
We left you out, Rachel.
To not have a glass. I'm just going to have to drink from the growler. Yeah.
We'll make it happen. Just maybe not immediately. Is there a style that's off limits? So you guys have barrels, though, too. And are you guys getting funky?
We do, yeah. We're getting funky. So actually, before we even started brewing beer for distribution, we have a great relationship with Beneducci Vineyards out in New Jersey. He had some empty wine barrels, so we brought some of them over and brewed some Saison. Threw them in the barrels with some PDO, some Brett, a little bit of lacto, and they're just kind of mellowing out. They're about 6 months old now. We did the first tasting a couple weeks ago, and they're a little young, but tasting clean so far, so we're excited to see where they'll go. But there's really no style that's ever been off limits. I mean, I think even in the 6 months we've been open, we've probably brewed close to maybe even 30 different styles of beer.
There's some pretty healthy debates in Monday morning meetings.
Yeah.
But it always, I think a big thing from the start was kind of showing a good breadth of styles.
Yeah.
Kind of a little bit of everything.
Yeah. It's nice in that I think all of the members of our team each have varying tastes. So there's, you know, a healthy portion of us who are diehard German and Czech lager drinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another contingent who like, you know, hazy, hoppy beers and...
Not Ryan Bedford here.
He was very solidly in that first camp. but, you know, I think we are especially proud of some of the traditional continental lagers that we've been putting out. So just to date, you know, our Pilsner's year-round. We brew our Helles. We've done a Schwartz beer. And then fermenting away right now, we have a Maibock. So it seems like every month or two, we have a different, you know, lager style that we're testing out in the 30 barrel for distribution all over the city.
So as home brewers, we're always worried about cross-contamination. First of all, thank you for letting me engage in corporate aspects. I mean, harnessing wisdom here in front of an audience. Are you guys using different stuff when you're using PDO and Brett? Do you have separate hoses for said things?
So the way that we approached it is we brewed our Saison base, fermented it out in steel with DuPont strain Saison, and then transferred into barrels, which is where we dose the bugs.
Okay.
So we haven't had any issues with, you know, crossing hoses or anything yet. Once we go to rack out of the barrels, we will probably go with disposable tubing.
Gotcha.
To do that, just yeah. And then, you know, after we're done racking, just throw it out because we don't want to mess with that whatsoever.
Don't want it around. I like it.
It scares the daylights out of me, especially considering all the lagers that we're making.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually did a barrel fermented lager too. So
Yeah, that's another one. Helles, right? Yeah. Was that Helles? Yeah.
And we did adjunct lager with New York State Grits, our Strummer.
Oh yeah.
See,
there's
excellent beer.
It's called Heritage. Yeah.
Awesome.
I think everybody burned themselves that day.
Yeah.
So we did a cereal mash with corn grits. We had our homebrew system rolled out, and we had the three burners going on high, and we were stirring these grits. And I think everybody got splashed at least once.
I love it.
You know, got a battle scar that day.
That's our show.
No.
Just about. Are there any events that you guys are excited to be rolling out for Beer Week or before or after? Or what about the tap room? Is there anything happening in the tap room?
We do have the collaboration release party, which is really exciting.
The 22nd. It's February 22nd. Thursday, February 22nd.
Yep.
Basically, it's going to go on tap, and we're going to
be there. Yeah, cans there, too. So cans and draft throughout the city. Yeah, so keep an eye out. Nick's fiance actually did the label.
Yes.
You let the cat out of the bag.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be a picture of my 17-year-old.
I know we tried to do the throwback pictures, but we ran into some legal issues.
There wasn't room for my mullet.
I had way too much hair back then.
Somehow you had your yearbook picture is like ready.
It's exciting. So we'll have that. And then you have some more we're having an acoustic night in the tap room coming up. So we're really trying to, we've been doing so many external events. Trying to kind of grow the tap room as well. So getting some live music in there. We had like an empanada pop up for Super Bowl. And it's nice because it's starting to not only turn into more of a neighborhood spot, but also kind of a family spot as well. And that's kind of a really special thing to see. Great.
We're about to roll out, before the beer week starts as well, a drink from the source map of New York City. Awesome. That's going to be on the site. And that'll certainly include your tapware.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do a big old printout too at the festivals that we're having. So.
Awesome.
For what it's worth.
Awesome. And where can we find you on the internet and social media?
So it's fiveboroughs.com, fiveboroughs.com. Our name's super long, so our social media differs. Five Boroughs Brewing on Instagram, Five Boroughs Brewing Co. on Untapped and Facebook, and Five Boroughs on Twitter.
You got five? How did you get five boroughs on Twitter?
That's a story for another podcast.
Well, I'm impressed.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening to Men About It. Again, we're in the studio with Blake.
Last name always Tomnitz. Tomnitz. That's fine. I know. It's complicated. It's complicated. Well.
It's not really. You say it three times. Five Tomnitz, Tomnitz, Tomnitz. Carl Knoop, Knoop, Knoop. Nick Griffin, Griffin, Griffin. For Men About It.
For Men About It.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.